Blog Talk Radio.
And, you know, I didn't know what intro song to have tonight. I had no idea. And I just went, you know, because the second contest is Happiness Is. So I just went with the song that made me feel happy. So there, old time rock and roll. There you go.
You've done good, girl. I was sitting here singing away, and honest to God, if I had to sing for my supper, I would never have been as big as I got.
Me neither.
No. So who else is on with us today? Anyone else on with us today?
Maybe I guess not. We'll have fun together.
Oh, yeah.
A party of two.
A party of two.
And maybe somebody else. Yeah, and somebody will maybe join in after a while. Maybe they'll phone in. I know Jody was running late on a job he had to get done there because the rain was coming. So I think he might be joining us, but maybe later on. I don't know. But for now, I guess it's just me and you, my dear.
Awesome. Well, let's go with it then. Are you posting for us?
Yeah, I have the first poem up right now. There we go. Boy, Naomi, you're going to have to talk more tonight. Just the two of us. Oh, my gracious.
Now, when do you know me not able to talk?
Yes, you make up for it, Diane.
I can talk. So what we have one? What do we have up first?
Well, Ears That Have Eyes by Heartthrob. So you want to go ahead and give that a read to Diane?
Sure, I would love to read that. Thank you very much for asking me. Okay, Ears That Have Eyes by Heartthrob. August 1st, 1991. Doctor said, we have to take him. He's only 4 weeks early. Don't understand. That wasn't part of the plan. Underdeveloped to no surprise. Mom and Dad's tears filled their eyes. Realizing the magnitude of the moment. Oh, my God, don't want this. At 2 pounds and 1/4 ounce, our baby boy was announced. He's light as a feather, seen as under the weather. Fragile, to say the least, we as parents wrestle with peace, yet joyful. Blindfolded, his first 100 days, yellow skin, jaundice appears. No chance of what that must feel like. He has no sight, not as of yet. To see with my ears from what he hears, his senses in overdrive, he doesn't realize his condition. Doctor says he'll never walk and quite possibly never talk. We struggle to hear his point of view. Is this a catch-22? Avoiding disaster, we lean on the master wholeheartedly with faith for tomorrow can't wait. Sammy's here for a reason and has purpose in season as we await the outcome of another day be done. Anxious moments. Blindfold comes off, a big gasp of air just doesn't seem fair. Yes, he can see as he looks dead at me, free of blindness, praise be. He's released to go home, yet there's many things to know with a child his size we just didn't realize. But we're game for the challenge, such a miracle in the making. There is no mistaking that this was meant to be. Now look, this is he. Alas, he's free. Praise the Lord above, because he's born of love. Where no weapon formed against him shall prosper. Thank God he's got him. Can't wait to see what his future holds. End poem. Well, this is a powerful write on the prompt that receiving news from a doctor and what that would look like and what your illness. And this must be a hard thing for parents to have to deal with, you know, to hear that their newborn baby is afflicted with all this and may not walk, may not talk. What a hard thing to have to go through. And it was, you know, brilliantly captured here in this write. And the thing that came at me the most is when he said, Yes, he can see, and he looks dead at me, free of blindness, crazy. That's what you want to hear. That's the kind of things you want to hear when you hear news like that. Excellent, right? Thank you so much, Heartthrob, for sending this in to us. And Naomi, what did you think of this, right?
Yeah, you know, when you have I never had a premature baby, but I knew I just and had a family members that went through this last year. And, you know, it was heart-wrenching to see them, you know, exhausted because, you know, they of course, you have to work at the same time, you know, money has to keep coming in. And you know, the father was working all day. Then he'd go and spend the night in the hospital while the mother, while she was on parental leave, while she'd be there all day with the baby. And then, you know, he'd be there at night. So I don't know how they did it. I don't know how they managed. But, you know, it's hard on everybody, you know. You know, you're just waiting there for news and you know, to see if the baby's going to make it or not, you know. He was so premature. It was a little boy, too. And right now he's one, and he's doing, he's really, you know, caught up and doing really good. But, you know, even after, when you get them home, prematures, you know, they still need that care. And, you know, they're still so vulnerable, and, you know, you know, the parents are so nervous, every little thing, and, you know, you can't leave them cry too much. You can't, you know, so you're already overtired from being in the hospital all those, you know, those weeks, all those months. And then, you know, when you get them home, it's even more tiring, too. So, yeah, it's really, really hard. And it was very well captured here. And, you know, I can't stop wondering, because they say in the poem, and this is he, I wonder if that picture of that football player is the is the premature baby now. I was just wondering about that. I was looking at the AN. I was wondering if that was the baby now, you know, the son now.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It could very well be, and that's a good, you know, that's a good outcome if, you know, they didn't have hope for him walking or talking, and now he's playing football. Like, that's a good. But it was very brilliantly written and very well done, and great write to the prompt, for sure.
Absolutely.
And what do we have up next?
Yeah, next. I don't know. People are, the groups are all mixed up on my page. Okay, I got it. Okay, there.
Oh, yeah, you got the right
in there. Yeah, okay. Yeah, well, next we have Stairs by Rachel M. Rad. And I guess I'll go ahead and give that a read. Stairs. The tan carpet on the stairs used to be white. It was so fluffy and soft when I was 5. I used to sit at the top with a blanket under me. I'd tug the edges of pink fleece tight and slide down. 1 bump, 2 bump, 3, 4, 5, all the way down to 15. When I was 8, I would run down them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, ba-bump. I hopped down the last 3. Cha-chink, a china cabinet rattled. I would freeze and stare at it. The cabinet never fell. So when I was 10, I started running up. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Get back here, you little 9, 9, 10, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. Rachel, get down here. 15, run, run, run. Bang, click, open this door. Rachel! Sometimes I did open the door. So when I was 16, I would move quieter. softer, silent. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Walking heel to toe on each step. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. Creak, slower, slow, slow, easy, okay. 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. Good, good. Now, Rachel, come here. When I was 20, I tumbled down those stairs. 1, 2, 3, 4, or was it 5, 6, 8, 9? Oh, God, I'm going to die. 10, 12, oh, bump, ow, ow. Get up. I didn't push you that hard. That tan carpet is doused with red, just like her hands. For at 21, I no longer walk upstairs. End poem.
Wow. You know what, Naomi? I bet you any money Rachel is quite happy with how you read that. You did a beautiful job of that. You carried that through. You put suspense into it. You brought out the energy, the excitement. Like, you put everything into that read. Exceptionally well done. And this, you know, I remember this right from when I was judging this contest. And if you read the author's notes, there's a possibility that that she's in a wheelchair now because of this situation. And it's like, you know, when I put these comps out, I never anticipated that it would affect somebody so much. That they would be able to take that prompt and put it into life and tell their true story, which is what she did here, and did an excellent job. Really built up the suspense and carried us through from childhood to adult life. Excellent job, excellent write. And Naomi, you read that beautifully. What did you think of that, my girl?
Yeah, you know, I can't help seeing in the author's notes, like you said, you know, that also she has the words pain, family, sad, and abuse there. So, you know, it makes it even more, you know, a wrenching, heart-wrenching, that's right. You know, I wonder if there was some kind of family abuse going on, you know, where she was pushed down the stairs. And, you know, possibly like she writes in her AN in a wheelchair because of that now. You know, so, yeah, really heart-wrenching write. But I have to applaud the writing. My gracious, you know, the way she just imitated that young, when she was young, how she'd run up the stairs and how she used the stairs throughout the whole poem to give us quite a captivating and a wonderful write, you know. And, you know, and then at the end, you know, if I would have known the AN, you know, I didn't read that far. I did read this right before, but I didn't read the AN. You know, get up, I didn't push you that hard. That would have been more the sound of that, because, you know, I know that sound, you know, because, you know, I was in an abusive relationship too. And you know, that would have been a phrase that I would have heard often, you know. Yeah, like, you know, don't stop crying, you know, you just deserve it. And yeah, so it resonated a lot with me. I can really relate. And yeah, it came and got me, you know, so. But what an excellent write.
Oh, amazing write. Really, really well done. I am really impressed with the writes to these prompts. You know, because this prompt, number 15, up and down the steps, said, write a poem that includes the motion of going up and down the staircase. Well, she did that beautifully. You know, she counted the steps. She brought in each step individually. She brought in the feelings, the emotions, the physical feelings around it all, like just the excellent write, really well done. And that was, what do we have next?
We have due to dear doctor's divine duty. And your turn to read, my dear Diane.
Yeah, I'm just going back to it. Here we go. Due to dear doctor's divine duty by Budaban Panda. Due to gynecology doctor's divine duty, daughter-in-law of mine, luck was bright. Dear grandson's birth tasted like sweet. Doctor gave information at door of OT. Days passed, but memory unforgettable. Duly obliged to doctor as moral principle. Doctor is second Lord who blesses us. Drug, doctor, disease had due relevance. Dear Almighty Lord Krishna, says in Gita, drug myself, Ashadi Aham have faith. I probably didn't do justice to that language, but I tried my best. And end poem. I remember this one as well, going through, and you know, what a miracle that comes to be, and to put your faith in the doctor, and a life-changing experience that can be very traumatic. You know, it's a birth, but it's very traumatic, and you know, the capturing of this to the prompt was beautifully done due to dear Dr. Divine's duty. You know, he captured this beautifully. And one of the things I really like is when a writer tells a story of their truth. And they put the truth in there. And when you write your truth, there's absolutely nothing you can find wrong with the writing. Because when you write your truth, it's a writing in the making. It's meant to be. Your truth is exactly what should come out of your pen. Exceptionally well done. And Naomi, what did you think, girl?
Yeah, I was just wondering, what is OT? Doctor gave information at the
occupational therapy, maybe?
Okay.
I don't know.
Okay, I was wondering if it was like a door in the hospital or something, because the doctor gave the information at the door of OT. Maybe it was I don't know. But the line that got me was, dear grandson's birth tasted like sweet. I really liked that, you know. Yeah, that really, yeah. So, you know, I get it that, you know, maybe she had, what do you call that? You know, when you don't give birth naturally, you have a cesarean, maybe?
Cesarean, yeah.
Yeah, and so she had a, pardon me?
Maybe, yeah.
Yeah, and maybe, you know, because of that, the son was saved. Because of the gynecology doctor, because now science has evolved, and that's a blessing, and I really liked this all the way through. Duly obliged to the doctor, you know, as a moral principle. The doctor is second Lord who blesses us. The Lord blessed them with you know, her getting pregnant and now the son's, you know, the son being there, I guess. And, you know, the doctor is like a second God to them, you know, because he was able to deliver the baby and give them a healthy son. And you know, days pass, but memory unforgettable. Yeah, you know, it is unforgettable when you have a newborn. Wonderfully well done.
Yeah, very much agree with you, girl. Very well done. And we have a friend on the board, DW in London, says occupational therapy. That's what the OT stands for.
Okay.
Gynecology. Yeah. So,
okay.
Excellent, right. And really well done to the prompt as well. So where are you taking us next, my girl?
Whoops, I went and got the same poem. I'm so sorry. Just a second. Going back. Oh, boy, Naomi. Okay. So next we'll have Body of Evidence by Bill Schiller. And I'll just get it on the board and then give it a read. There we go. Am I in the right room? Because the last time I put a bunch of poems in the wrong room and then I got kind of, you know, scuffed at putting
all these links
to poems. Oh, boy. Okay, these funny how these groups go all over the place. These rooms. Okay, there, I got it in both rooms. Okay. Yeah, like Pam says, they're powerful and very emotive rights on the show so far. Yeah, absolutely, Pam. I agree. And this is Body of Evidence by Bill Schiller. Farmer Ron is missing. The town folk are sick with worry. For no matter where he went, Farmer Ron left in a hurry. His tractor was still running, blood on ground as if he fell, but someone dragged away the body. Somebody somewhere had a tale to tell. Sheriff John and his deputies found no clues. Was Ron's widow truly distraught or hiding facts? All throughout their marriage, she was so handy with an axe. Ron's neighbor too, anger never far. After Ron's dog shat in his yard, he once threatened with a bat. Ron's death may be accident, but who made body disappear? Defied coincidence as fear refused rot. Answers still eluded the bevy of baffled cops. Gray clouds swept over farm. Who would harvest crops? Who'd care for Farmer Ron's abandoned dog? Mass searches and suspect interviews, none served to clear the fog. Behind barn, drag tracks led to grave, a clue. The grave was filled with chew toys, beside bones big as logs. Police then caught their culprit. It was the family dog. End poem.
What a cool write. I really enjoyed this write. This was done to the prompt of, which prompt was that? I can't quite remember, but it was about a crime scene, and this was so well put together. Farmer Ron is missing. The town folk are sick with worry. And then to come down to the end of it, it was the dog. It's like, What a creative right with built-in lots of suspense and twists and turns and what if this and what if that. Excellent right with a great ending. Really, really well done. Quite impressed with this one, Bill. And what did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, I was so captivated all the way through. Oh, my gracious, you know. He wrote this so well. You know, with all the suspects there. And then, you know, right up to the end, he really had me. I was reading this as if I was reading a mystery novel. And, you know, really well written, you know. And I didn't know what to accept. Expect it in the end, but yeah, the family dog. So he ended it with a sense of humor there, and Yeah, and yeah, really well written. My gracious, wonderful. And that body of evidence, yeah, find the body there. Body of evidence, great title. Really like
yeah.
this, right? Bravo, Bill.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And he wrote to prompt number 3, suspicion. Pretend you are a detective and you have to narrow down the suspects. Farmer Fred was found buried behind the old battered barn. So he wrote to that, and he did a wonderful job of it and took it quite into what, you know, the prompt was hoping for, a write that gives us a suspect and narrow it down. Excellent job. Really followed the prompt. Great write. All righty. And next up we have
A Bus Journey, so by Lone Avocado. And your turn to read, my dear Diane.
Okay, I would love to read this. And it's called A Bus Journey. I was going to my grandma's place with a cousin of mine. We were both children back then. It was a funny ride. We were going by bus to a rural place. The bus was an old one. It was stopping in the middle of the ride quite a few times. People were getting on and getting off in the middle of the journey. Some were eating, some were smoking. We did not have much money. Some got on the bus with a few live chickens in their hand. How they made their journey on the rooftop, I don't understand. The bus driver was pretty risky. He was driving at a great speed. It was going to fall into a ditch. I could still feel the heat. It was a journey I still remember. I was talking about it through my whole life. It was part of childhood. I can still see it wildly with my two eyes. A Bus Journey by Lone Avocado. What a great write to that prompt as well. You know, the prompt was to talk about a bus journey, talk about a ride on the bus and who got on, who got off, what were they doing, what were they wearing, stuff like that. And I mean, the write fulfilled the prompt. It put in the details. It put in description. It was an excellent write, pulling out a trip on a bus and giving us a downplay of everything that went on. And I said in my comments, I could totally relate to everything. I've took many a bus ride in my life. The only thing I can't relate to is the chickens on the bus. I didn't ever ride with chickens on a bus. But excellent job. And what did you think of this one?
Well, this took me back because I went and checked, and he said this poet was born in Bangladesh. So I think that explains a lot, you know, the chickens and everything. And, you know, of course, the ditches. And this takes me back to my daughter went on a humanitarian work in with her two daughters. She took my two granddaughters with her, and they went to Nepal to build to help build schools and build houses and, you know, help with the gardening and stuff like that. So she was in Nepal for a while, and she got almost a whole month, I guess, in Nepal. And they were on this bus, and, you know, she said, "Mommy, you would have croaked, you know." And she'd tell me about everybody and the animals on the bus and going around these steep cliffs, and, you know, thinking that they'd fall over the cliff, and the roads were so winding and so steep, and, you know, everything, and, you know, they'd almost get sick on the bus, you know, from worry. But, you know, everybody, this was their normal life, you know, going on these buses. And, yeah, so this brought me back to that, that, you know, that adventure that she was on and told me about. So, yeah, I imagine, you know, being from Bangladesh, that, you know, this would have been, you know, something else, you know, these bus rides. And probably the buses were old, too, probably not our new buses that we have here. So, you know, and this is told so well. You know, we were both children back then. It was a funny ride. We were going by bus to a rural place. So they were going, you know, from the, you know, changing scenery, absolutely. And it must have been quite an adventure for them, you know. And so, yeah, amazing, right? That really took us on a journey. And I love, you know, all the adventures, all the words that were used here. And the emotion that came out of it, you know, the feeling, you know, I still could feel the heat. You know, some people were smoking. You could just feel the atmosphere in that bus, you know, filled probably to the top with people, you know. And you can really, she really brought us there, you know, or he really brought us there. So wonderful, wonderful, right, indeed.
Yeah, for sure. I totally agree. You did right for that prompt, for sure. Excellent. All right. And where are we going next?
Okay. I'm just picking it up. It's going to be a poem by, am I in the group? No, that changed. The group's changed again. Oh, my gracious. Okay. Okay. There, pop that in. Okay, so this is one by Linda Evans, The Beginning of a Poem, Maybe. Is it my turn to read the Diane?
Yes, it is.
Okay, The Beginning of a Poem, Maybe. When your three best friends are a bottle of Prosecco, hot water bottle and TV, it's not good. Not only not good, but worrying. But since I've either dumped friends or they've dumped me recently, it's not exactly surprising realistically. She scribbled down on the back of an envelope whilst waiting for the 268 bus with an accompanying heavy sigh. End poem.
End poem. The beginning of a poem, maybe. I love the title that she put in here. It's very creative. The beginning of a poem, maybe. When your three best friends are a bottle of wine, hot water bottle, and TV. I'm 60 years old. Those sound pretty familiar. Hot water bottle and TV. But I love the way this was put together. I think this was written to the prompt that on waiting for a bus or taking a bus. And, you know, she's just sitting there thinking about, you know, her life and how her three best friends are these three items. And then she talks about losing some friends. Either she's dumped them or they've dumped her. So she's just going through and making an account of sitting waiting for this bus and what value in her life. A bottle of wine, a hot water bottle, and TV. I like it. It's very simple. It's very creative. It's put together to make me think, and it did make me think. A really, really good rendition of what you're going to do sitting waiting for a bus. And then she scribbled down on the back of an envelope while waiting for the 268 bus with an accompanying heavy sigh. Just a moment in time and what that moment gave her. Just a very clever, simple write. I really like it. And what did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, you know, this is a sign of a true writer here, you know. You know, when you scribble on, you always have something close to you, you know. You always have a paper pen and paper, and you're always scribbling no matter where you are. You're always noticing something. You're always scribbling down thoughts, whether you're sitting in a restaurant or whether you're just wherever you are, you know, like this person, she's at a bus stop. So I really like it from the title right down to the end. You know, it's just a capture of simplicity, of you know, just ordinary life. It's real, it's raw, it's, you know, it's so authentic and very well done. I really like, you know, when your three best friends are a bottle, and you said it. I didn't know what that was, Prosecco, but it's wine. So the bottle of wine, hot water bottle on TV, it's not good. And she stops there with a period. It's not good. And not only not good, but worrying. Yeah, you know, there's a sadness there, but also, I don't know, just the way she put it, it's not good, not only not good, but worrying. I don't know, I get it like a kind of a sense of humor in there. I don't know, I got a little bit of humor out of it anyway. And, but, you know, so well written, my gracious, you know. I really, really dig this right all the way through. And, I can relate sometimes too, you know, when I'm sitting on my couch in the evenings with a glass of wine and watching a TV show sometimes. I can relate. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So
it's almost like she sat down at the bus station, pulled out her phone, saw this contest poetry, and thought, I can write to this. And just pulled out her pen and her phone or whatever and put in this creative, clever little piece. I love it. Excellent. All righty. So we are done with our carryovers, and we are off onto our new contest, which is Happiness Is. And
yes.
We have one up for that.
Yeah, I put it up twice even. You see that? And this is my old cougar, Time for Bed. So, yeah, your turn, Diane, I guess, say to read.
Yeah, sounds good. This is called Time for Bed by Old Codger. And soon this quiet day will calmly close. The moon is changing places with the sun. I think of my achievements since I rose and muse upon the things I might have done. I might have crossed the sparkling desert sand or fought with frosting hands an Arctic squall. I might have led a Glasgow headline band and or at the ashes bowled the winning ball. So these I left for other folk to do. I'll read about their exploits by and by. I took a different path and muddled through without a fuss, without a hue and cry. I sat and wrote alone these lines instead, and now I'll take these faded bones to bed. End poem. Oh, what a cool write. I like this. It's based on a Shakespearean sonnet. Glasgow is a common abbreviation of a festival, and Ashes is a test cricket series played between. Oh, okay, cool. So Time for Bed, as soon as this quiet day will calmly close, the moon is changing places with the sun. I like that line. The moon is changing places with the sun. What a nice way to say the sun's going down and the moon's coming out. I think of my achievements since I rose and muse upon the things I might have done. Just really quite, you know, put together and description of time for bed and what went on throughout the day and what to do to go to bed. Just a, I, you know, and now I'll take these sated bones to bed. Sated bones as in satisfied. As in, okay, I've had a day, I'm satisfied with it, now it's time for bed, it's off to bed. What a clever little write that I totally enjoyed. And what did you think of this, my dear?
Yeah, I thought it was well done, you know. He's talking about all these things that he really didn't achieve much, I don't think, except for I don't know, writing a bit, you know, because, you know, he says, I could have, you know, I might have done. I muse upon the things I might have done. I might have crossed the sparkling desert sand or fought with frosting hands on Arctic soil. I might have led a Glasgow headline band or at the Ashes Bowl, the winning ball. But these I left for other folks to do. So, you know, he didn't do all this. He's just muddling over, you know, what the other people are doing and, you know, writing about it. And it's, you know, yeah, often you do that when you, yeah, I don't know. Sometimes when you go to bed, you just wonder what everybody else has been doing with their day or, you know, when we have four kids like I do. That's what you do. Wonder what this one did and wonder what that one did. And, you know, but yeah, I think that's kind of really creative and unique. And I really love the flow and the rhythm of this whole write. You know, I loved when you were reading it, Diane, you read it so well. And yeah, I really got a kick out of this one. It won a lot of, it wasn't a lot of contests. My gracious, look at all the ribbons it won. And so amazing, right?
Yeah, it's a very simplistic, right? You know, you're sitting down, you're about to go to bed, and you look back over your day, do a daily review and check it all out and come to terms with, you could have done all this, but you didn't do any of it.
Mm-hmm.
And so now
yeah.
I think I'll go to bed. It's just very creative, very well done. Made me smile all the way through when I was reading it, for sure. Excellent.
Get tired just thinking of it, everything else everybody did.
Alrighty, where are we off to next?
So next we have Recipe for Happy by Dark Night of the Soul. And I guess it's my turn to read. So Recipe for Happy. Today I'm cooking up something new. I've made a recipe for happy. Tired of the worries of every day. Time to make life a bit less crappy. I dug through some old recipe books, Julia, Martha, the standard crew, then read up from some philosophers and psychologists and poets too. A dash of sunshine, a sprig of shade. Get up off the couch and move your feet. Create your own kind of music that has its own individual beat. Have a friend or two share your pain. Be prepared to listen to their joys. Smile more regularly than you frown. Don't fear sharing your own kind of noise. Purr with kittens whenever they purr. Bark when the puppies are barking too. Never loudly shout out anything with a hugging, loving hug or squeeze will do. Be kind and patient as best you can, and maybe you'll get that in return. Blow on your soup with a gentle breath, with caution so that your tongue won't burn. Then you'll stir up all your highs and lows, neither lasts for a long duration. Respect your elders, eat your veggies, and live your life in moderation. End poem.
What a good life lesson out of this one, you know, like take a recipe for happiness here. And the things you have to do to find happiness or to create happiness or to give happiness. I've made a recipe for happy, tired of the worries every day, time to make life a little less crappy, a bit less crappy. And happiness is all what you put into it. And to go through a recipe book and to pull out a poem for a recipe for happiness and a dash of sunshine is shade. Get up off the couch and move your feet. Create your own kind of music that has its own individual beat. I love the positivity, the upbeat, the purr with kittens whenever they purr. Why not? You know, when a kitten purrs, they are happy. And I'm sure if as humans we could purr, we would too. But happiness is, you know, captured here. Happiness is not hard to find. And Dark Night of the Soul really captured here. And I read the author's notes and it says, in response to being told recently, I don't have enough joy. Well, all you got to do is write your joy. And Dark Night did this, just pulled out the pen and wrote a recipe for happiness. Excellent, brilliant, brilliant write. Really well done. And what did you think, my dear?
Yeah, and I really, really loved this. Oh, my gracious, so wonderfully written. You know, it's not, it's unique. And it's, you know, it's not your, poem, like ordinary poem about happiness, like do this, do that, do this, do that. You know, it's, you know, it's written in a way that's really enchanting, I find, and very captivating. And, you know, a little bit of humor here and there, like eat your veggies. You know, after respect your elders, he writes, eat your veggies and live your life in moderation. You know, blow on your soup with a gentle breath with caution so that your tongue won't burn. Yeah, you know, so he puts in little things of little moments of cheerfulness, I think. You know, it brought me a smile. You know, just the word he uses, like time to make life a bit less crappy. Yeah, you know, wonderful word choice too. I riveted to the same stanza as you did, Diane. You know, the one with the you cited there with the create your own kind of music that has its own individual beat. You know, I think that's so. You know, if you want to be happy, you have to know who you are, and yet you have to not be afraid of showing it and being yourself, and drumming to your own beat or dancing to your own beat, because you know we're all individually different, and you have to, you know, respect who you are and grow to love yourself, I think, if you want to find true happiness in the world. So I think that was an amazing stanza there. But all through, I just love this, you know. And I particularly like in the last stanza, he says, you know, then you'll stir up all your highs and lows. You know, not just the highs, but your lows too. You know, you have to learn to mix them in because, you know, they're part of life. You know, your life isn't just, you know, going up a mountain all the time and seeing the beautiful view there. It's, you know, it's full of lows too. So, you know, you have to accept them both, you know, your highs and your lows. So stirring them up together. And, you know, and then he says, neither lasts for a long duration. It's so true. You know, you go off a high, you go into a low, you go from a low, you go into a high. But, you know, so just enjoy life as it comes, I guess, you know, live in the moment and wonderful, right?
Yeah, it is. And it gives us, and it gives that lesson at the end that says, live your life in moderation. And that's so true. Happiness is not something that you should have to work hard for. Happiness should be just simply following the recipe and throwing in the ingredients and out comes a full-baked happy cake. You know, like you shouldn't have to work hard for happiness. You should be able to just do your little things and find that happiness, because happiness doesn't come with a price. Happiness should be just given so freely, and that's what this right does here. It says do this, do that, do this, and you'll be happy, and quite an awesome recipe for happiness. So very well done. And up next we have
Herius. I think that's the Herius. She has Herius is a beautiful Welsh word that means a longing for a home that does not really exist. So go ahead, Diane.
Okay, Herius by Lantia. When I close my eyes in the middle of the day to let my thoughts flow to a deep resting place, a sanctuary where the hurricane blows wild, an oasis for a traveler weary and worn. There are photographs blurred and sepia toned, memories like paintings framed long ago, lakes and mountains almost known, grasslands and prairies that I've stepped on, an icy-covered cottage in the wilderness, sounds of crickets, songbirds chirping, waters gurgling in a stream nearby, a night sky dancing with stars and fireflies. There are more flowers than I can count, tears and roses, carnations, marigolds, oaks broad and wide, spruces and pines, hedges of bougainvilleas, pink and white, murai-covered walls of stone and clay, polished floors of warm chestnut wood, cobalt carpets and yellow cushions, piles of books and paintbrushes strewn. And when I wake up with the sun on my face, Zephyrus gently moving the bedroom curtains, I find strong arms wrapped around my waist, sleepy eyes, languid smiles, soft melting kisses. My Herius is a sharp edged stream of a faraway place, nestled between imaginings of purple twilight, gray longing, sad echoes, and blood-warm sunlight, the pool of a home that keeps me wandering always. End poem. Herius is a beautiful Welsh word that means a longing for a home that does not exist. This has got a sadness to it. When I close my eyes in the middle of the day to let my thoughts flow to a deep resting place, an oasis for a traveler, weary and worn, looking for that home and not finding it. There are photographs blurred and sepia-toned, memories like paintings framed long ago. It sounds like a search for the happiness and searching within that home that doesn't exist. And is that home inside? Or where is that home? Is it, you know, the last line, the pull of a home that keeps me wandering always, tells me she's not found it or they've not found it. They haven't, they've been searching and looking for that home, but having not found it. It's there's a sadness to that, like when you live life looking for a certain thing and searching for it, and whether it's inside you or outside you, if you can't find it, there's a definite sadness to it. And Naomi, what did you think of this?
Absolutely, I agree, you know, but, you know, I have to applaud her on, you know, my gracious, the imagery in this is just crazy, mm-hmm. beautiful. you know, the descriptions here. You know, wouldn't you like to live in a place like this? You know, with you know, the with the cushions and the carpets and the piles of books and the paintbrushes strewn, because you know I paint, and you know, this would be, you know, just my perfect place, you know, with the flowers and the, yeah, you know, the hedges of bougainvilleas, pink and white. And wow, you know, the night, I just love that, you know, water gurgling in a stream nearby. I'd love to, you know, we live near a near a park, well, you know, which has a river passing through it and a waterfall, but, you know, it's not in my backyard. It's at the, you know, it's near my house, but it's not, it's down the street. But, you know, I'd love to have, like, water in my, you know, be beside the water, you know, look out the door. And I look out the door and I see the water in my pool. But, you know, I'd love to look out and see the ocean. Oh, my gracious, I'd love to live by the ocean, but or a river. But, you know, I'd love to hear that, the water, the stream, and, you know, then out in where you could see all the stars dancing, like she says, in the night sky, and fireflies and, you know, everything. So, yeah, I get what you're saying, though. There is like a longing, a yearning in this poem that I feel, you know, that she wants to find this perfect place, and she wants to, you know, be at peace. I find there's a kind of a, like a wandering soul here. Like you said, Diane, who hasn't found a place to settle down yet. So, you know, this could be also just a metaphor for that too, you know, for finding that inner peace, you know. So, you know, whether you take it literally or whether you take it an extended metaphor, you can go a lot of places with this poem. I really, really enjoyed it.
Yeah, I did as well. It was a great write, and made me think and took me to a place of, what if I was searching for that home? You know, what if I was searching for that place to be and could create it the way the writer created this? Just a really well done. And up next is...
Next, we have Quiet Company by Blues Man. And I'll get that in the two rooms. Okay, and I guess it's my time to read. So this is Quiet Company. My still life family stoically represents the thousand-mile stare of solace within. Treasured moments of quiet contemplation. Lifeless eyes hold no malice nor resentment for all the years of dust-covered neglect. There are content to be placed upon my bookshelf or framed to stare out from my wall. Figurines of fancy next to eclectic idols of religion. Bobblehead of Einstein beside Buddha's dusty belly, a copper church music box alongside castaways Wilson, square red candle covered in rays lettered sentiment, love the only word that was chosen to be spelled out, a last gift from my soulmate before she passed away. Candy canes and coffee cups next to pens no longer used. A reminder of holidays come and gone in echoed emotion. Each piece has earned the right to be in my place of solace for the unlocked memories that connect me to the world. End poem.
Wow, what a powerful write. And I read that at the bottom there. The theme is isolation, and Oh, I don't know. Isolation is such a powerful topic to talk about, because it can be so detrimental to you. It can be so harmful to you, isolation. And you know, when we go into isolation, and the right here talks about my still life family, stoically represents the 1,000-mile stare of solace within treasured moments of quiet contemplation. Lifeless eyes hold no malice nor resentment for all the years of dust-covered neglect. And then to go on and describe this neglect as things placed upon the bookshelf, the metaphor for that, you know, of years of dust-covered neglect and years of dust-covered trinkets sitting on the bookshelf, and to compare your life to those, you know, to the neglect in your life. Just a brilliant, powerfully built right here. Figurines of fancy next to electric idols of religion. You know, things that you search for, and things that, you know, a bobblehead of Einstein beside Buddha's dusty belly. Like the isolation captured in here, candy canes in coffee cups, next to pens no longer used. That's the line that stood out for me. Next to pens no longer used. That, if that doesn't say isolated, what does? You know, like if you have a pen and you're not using it, you are in isolation. If you, like the metaphor of having a pen for your life, right? Just to be able to write out your feelings and stuff. It's just a powerful, powerful right. And what did you think of this, Naomi?
I agree. The pen stood out for me too so much. You know, oh my gracious, this is such a heartfelt poem. You think of that pen, and you think of his soulmate. You know, she says sheep before she passed away. You know that in most families, you know, the Christmas cards or the letters are usually written by the women, and well, mostly, not all the time. I don't want to, you know, but, you know, in most families they are, you know, they're the ones that send out the Christmas cards, and you know, they're the ones that send out the letters to the kids and whatever, the friends, and to know that, you know, that pen no longer used, and, you know, right after the line that, you know, or his soulmate has passed away, I think that gives it even more, you know, emphasis on that, you know, that the pen is no longer used, that sense of, like you said, Diane, that sense of loneliness, of isolation there. And, and then he follows that line, a pen no longer used, a reminder of holidays come and gone in echoed emotion. So, yeah, you know, that really, really hits hard. Each piece has earned the right to be in my place of solace, for they unlock memories that connect me to the world. So, you know, the way he wrote this poem, oh my gracious, it's as if, you know, each little piece, each little figurine or trinket there, even the pens no longer used, you know, the candy canes and coffee cups, you know, that all connects him to a life that's passed, you know, as is probably his soulmate passed away, so did, you know, his connection to the world. And so these are things that she left behind, probably, or, you know, collections that they did together, you know, that they, things that, items that they collected together. And, you know, they're just laying there underneath dust, like you said. And as he is in a way, you know, all the years of dust covered neglect, They are contents to be placed upon my bookshelf or framed to stare out from my wall. So, you know, he is like the trinkets. He is like all these things that are collected, you know. And that's his world now. So, wow, this is, you know, such a sad piece. And so, you know, yeah, really heart-wrenching. Well written, my gracious, so well written.
Yeah, it is. I totally agree with you. Well written and quite the theme to put together the theme and pull that sadness out of it, that sadness, that isolation can bring us to. And you were talking about that lack. Each piece has earned the right to be in my place of solace for the unlocked memories that connect me to the world. And it makes you wonder, are they trying to get out of isolation since their partner has passed away? Are they trying to fight the isolation? And it's a hard thing to fight. And the truth that was captured and written here is just unbelievably brilliant. And thank you, Bluesman, for sending that in and sharing that with us. Really well done. And we are off to
In Granny's Nook by Jenny the Deep. And I don't know whose turn it is to read. Oh, my gracious, I'm also tonight.
I think it's my turn.
Okay.
In My Granny's Nook by Jenny the Deep. Silently I read a book of delightful poetry, just me and my little book in my granny's cozy nook. Sunlight glistens through the bay window, reflecting off the glass French doors, keeping me nice and posty. Here is my granny's nook. Here in my granny's nook. Happy as a clam, secure in its shell, I escape in a world of fantasy, filled with a whirlwind of emotional entries, here in my granny's nook, just me and my book. End poem. Oh, what a cute little piece, In My Granny's Nook. And who among us don't remember our granny's nook, whether it was her little pantry where she sat and grabbed all her ingredients for baking, or whether it was the kitchen table where she sat me down for a bowl of her homemade soup, or my granny's nook, whatever that nook might be, was always a place that you rustle to, like you run to, you're attracted to. So yeah, really, really good write and cute. Like I thought it was cute and short and really packed the punch. Really well written. And what did you think, Naomi?
Yeah, there's something so cozy about this write. You know, it's like you said, you know, just the idea of a granny's nook there. You know, happy as a clam, secure in its shell. I love that line. I escape in a world of fantasy filled with a whirlwind of emotional entries. Here in my granny's nook, just me and my book. You know, this takes me way back, you know, to my growing up. Growing up, it was me and my books. And, yeah, I was really like, you know, my father built me a library in my bedroom. And yeah, with all the bookshelves that surrounded all the walls of my room, and so I basically my bed was in the middle of a library, and because I used to read, oh my gracious, I used to read so much. And, oh boy, I'd read and read and read. So this takes me way, way back to my childhood and, yeah, and all through my teenage years too. And, yeah, me and my books. And I think that Jenny, Jenny did an amazing job here with the, you know, both the writing and the rhythm, the flow of the whole piece, and the feeling that you get from it too, you know, that feeling, like I said, that coziness that comes off this write. And just beautiful writing. Very well done, Jenny.
Yeah, very well done, for sure. I totally agree with you. It's a piece that you mentioned, Naomi, that, you know, you could relate to it, and I could relate to it, and who couldn't relate to it reading this, right? We all had a granny, and, you know, sometimes we just don't know how to describe our granny's nook, but Jenny, the deep, she pulled this one out of the book, and she put it together beautifully. Really, really well done.
Absolutely.
All righty. And where are we off to next?
Well, we're really advancing in these poems. We're going to have to talk more because, my gracious, we have no poems left to talk about. Embrace the Day by Randa Yosri. And I'm going to, wow, isn't that beautiful? Artwork by Lisa Koff. Embrace the Day. It's a booming, beautiful day. That's beautiful artwork. Okay. When time chisels his tracks on your face and aging muscles moan, weeping from pain, while night skin bathes in sun's silky rays, today is a precious gift to treasure. When agony's wounds invade body cell by cell, and frustration bangs angrily on the doors, while sprouts pop their heads out of trouble, today is a precious gift, treasure. When the past leaves stained footprints on life, and hope lost his gratitude over the years, while spring defeats winter in his den, today is a precious gift to treasure. When obstacles clasp the future's hand and strength starves dying of thirst, while bees hum inside their beehives, today is a precious gift to treasure. End poem.
Wow. What a, you know, I'm not going to hide the fact that I'm a fan of Rhonda's writing. I always have been. And this was really well put together on, I love the opening line, when time chisels his tracks on your face. And when you reach my age and you realize time definitely does that, you have to look at, like, and aging muscles moan, weeping from pain, with night skin bathed in sun's silky rays. Today is a precious gift to treasure. And that repetition of that line in every stanza, I don't know if you can realize exactly the power that line says. Today is a precious gift to treasure. And isn't that the case, you know, like every day when we wake up, it is a precious gift treasure. And whether you're dealing with pains or emotional pain or physical pain, when obstacles clasp the future's hand and strength starves dying of bees hum inside their beehive, today is a precious gift to treasure. And aging, in her notes, aging is an extraordinary process where you become the person you always should have been. And David Bowie. And that is so true, you know, like aging is, you have to become the person you should have been when you age because you have no choice. And it's at that point that when you realize you're aging, that you realize you have no choice but to go with each day. Each day is a precious gift. I went to the doctor last week, and I just got a call from them today. I have something with my rotator cuff in my shoulder. And it's like, what the heck? How do you get a rotator cuff problem in your shoulder? Well, 60 years of using your right hand over and over and over, that's what it's going to do. And when I wake up with that kind of pain and I live that kind of pain, I have to stop thinking. Today is a precious gift to treasure. And that's what the message is here, embrace today. And that comes with the saying, I actually have it tattooed on my arm. It says, just for today, one day at a time. And that's how we should live, is one day at a time, because we don't have anything else to live life with except time, one day at a time. And the way she put this together, again, I love Rhonda's work, and the way she put this together created a, you know, I'm not going to guess her age or anything, but I don't think she's my age, but she did a wonderful rendition here of what it's like to age, what it's like to feel this age at a certain point in your life, whether you're there or not. Just an excellent, brilliant write on this. And Naomi, what did you think, my dear?
Oh, absolutely. Me too. I'm a fan of Rhonda's for sure. And, you know, this is such an exceptional write. When the past leaves stained footprints on life and hope lost his gratitude over the years, while spring defeats winter in his den, today is a precious gift, a treasure. Isn't that, you know, all through the juxtaposition of, you know, the life passing and, you know, everything that passes by and, you know, comes to an end with, you know, that sentence, you know, the juxtaposition of the two reinforces her message all throughout this poem. Just amazing, you know. The last one is really neat. While bees hum inside their beehive, and I don't know if I think bees. Well, some of them have a short lifespan. Could that be? I'm trying to remember from my science projects in school. I know I did one on bees, but I know if they sting you, they die. If they sting you protecting their home or protecting themselves or, you know, protecting their queen, they'll die immediately because, you know, they lose their stinger there. But, you know, I don't know if that's why she put that there, because they do have such a short lifespan, or because you talk about bees a lot being a species that are, you know, you're always worried that the bees are going to be extinct one day. Well, here anyway, we talk about it a lot, you know. And so, you know, but that line really stood out for me, while bees hum inside their beehive. You know, today is a precious gift to treasure, whether it be just the bees metaphor for us inside of our lives, or, you know, a metaphor for the you know, how fragile life is. I think that is such a unique and a strong line there to be used in that stanza. But me too, you know, like you said, the first stanza, wow, what a way to use original language to explain aging. You know, when time chisels his tracks on your face and aging muscles moan, weeping from pain, while night skin bathes in sun silky rays. Wow. You know, I'd say master of language, I guess, Rhonda is, you know, because she uses the language so masterfully throughout this piece. Just wonderful, wonderfully well written.
Yeah, she is a wordsmith indeed, and knows quite well how to put her words together. And I think you're on to something with the while the bees hum inside their beehive, because you know what? One of the things we forget in our lives, because we are like bees, we're workers. We're busy. We hum around. We do things inside our life, and we forget that today is today. And bees don't ever take today into consideration. They work and hum and go 24/7. And so I think that there might be something there about the metaphor of, you know, we have to stop and take a break and realize that today is a precious gift. And if we're continuing on and going like bees, we are never going to realize that. So I think for sure you caught on to something there.
And that's a good observation. Yeah, you know, it's so true, comparing ourselves to busy little bees. So true. We don't appreciate the moment. We're always going, going, going. So, so well said there. Great observation there, Diane.
Yeah, I think Rhonda really pulled together here a beautiful metaphor to give us a message. Take it one day at a time, guys. Really well done. Great write.
Absolutely.
And up next is
Geek Love. Yeah, I love that title, Geek Love by Ephesiana. And your turn to read, my dear.
My turn to read? I thought I read Rhonda's.
Oh, you did? Okay, my turn to read then. Okay, Geek Love. Do you see a future with this girl? I quote Scott Pilgrim, referring to him myself. With jetpacks, he quoted back. Are we okay? He wondered after a fight. Everything shiny, Captain. A-okay, I assured him that night. When we picked rings together forever and ever, he called them our shiny jetpacks. When we watched Deadpool, we saw ourselves in Wade and Vanessa, two jigsaw pieces with weird, curvy edges. You crazy matches, my crazy, became the mantra, my jagged little puzzle piece. We are Jack and Sally, ruling Halloween town. We are lily pad and marshmallow, making too many pancakes. He is the Ben Wyatt to my Leslie Knope. Proud when I passionately rant. End poem.
This is a cool one now. So Faithy's husband must be a geek. That's what I get out of this, because in the bottom there she says, my husband. And do you see a future with this girl? Just talking about the relationship, going through the relationship, and she wrote this back in 2019. When we watched, she's comparing her and her husband, it sounds like, to all these characters, and not just the characters, but your crazy matches my crazy, become the mantra, my jagged little puzzle piece. There's such a love story here, and a camaraderie, you know, geek love. I mean, what a way to put it. And maybe Faithy's a geek herself. I don't know. But the geek love is like, I love the title, just like you. You're expecting something humorous when you hear that title, and she delivered that. When we watched Deadpool, we saw ourselves in Wade and Vanessa, two jigsaw pieces with weird curvy edges. I love the way she compares the two of them. Two jigsaw pieces of a puzzle that you put together, and you become the mantra. You become that piece that matches. I love it. I love the story to it. I love the creativity to it. We are lily pad and marshmallow making too many pancakes. He is the Ben Wyatt to my Leslie Proud when I passionately rant. Just, I really enjoyed this, Ray. And you know what, Mamie? I think you did read Rhonda's, so I had you read twice there, so I cheated you, girl. But what did you think of this one?
Yeah, well, I don't know Aphasiana very much, but I know her a little bit. And, you know, I do think she does consider herself as a geek. You know, I don't know if she still does it, but she played in these role plays, you know, when you go off with your... this historian, you dress up as these characters, and you act out these I don't know if it's Vikings or whatever it is there, these historical battles, and you do this role play. I know she's into that. I don't know if she still is. And she's she reads a lot. I know I think she reads to kids in the library. And so I do think she does consider herself as a geek. And, you know, it's wonderful, you know, just reading this poem, it warmed me because, you know, so awesome that she found somebody that matches that geekness, if I can say there, that geekness. And you know, when you find that you're one, you're somebody, you know, that completes you. That's so amazing. And you know, and she is such an awesome writer. Aphasiana is, you know, every one of her pieces are unique and so well put together. I just love, you know. Two jigsaw pieces with weird curvy edges. Your crazy matches my crazy became the mantra, my jagged little puzzle piece. Oh, that's so cute. You know, and yeah, the one with the pancakes, you know, that is so, the we are lily pad and marshmallow making too many pancakes. That is so awesome. Yeah, just well done all the way through. I really, really enjoyed this. It's so unique and such a beautiful piece, you know, put together. And you know, she has her husband there, but you know, you have friendship. And you know, when you're with somebody, you're your partner, and he becomes your best friend at the same time. Well, my gracious, you know, that's everything. That's true love right there. So just amazing.
Yeah, I love it when she said, your crazy matches my crazy. When you can find someone to match your crazy in life, then you're set. You know, there's not too many people out there that can match your kind of crazy until you find that special one. Just a great write. And yes, like you said, Aphasiana's writing is like, you know what, when you see her name up there, you know you're going to get a good write. You're going to get a write that you're just going to fill up with and want to pick apart. But, yeah, brilliant write. Really well done. And up next, I think we're going to be okay, Naomi. We've got four left.
Yeah, we have four left, yeah. Yeah, we might end up with no carryovers for once, eh? How's that? How awesome is that? Fresh start. So the next one is The Holy Sacred Secret, and your turn to read, my dear Diane.
Yes, it is. I won't cheat you out this time. Okay. The Holy Sacred Secret by Samer Amin. The waves of life are still swaying and dancing on the surface of the greatest ocean of eternal light. The waves of life are still leaping with glorious joy and happiness. Whenever they are moved by the will of the eternal ocean of lights from non-existence to existence, the waves of life dance with ecstasy and joy after gaining the bliss of life and the sense of a single self, despite acquiring a unique sense of a separate self, they still retain the glorious light and the sanctity of the original ocean of light. This primordial holiness is the basic foundation of the true happiness that causes the newly created waves of life to still dance in joyful merriment at the very roots of their existence. Their new existence that gave them a sense of unique individuality and free will, an autonomous free will derived from the original source, the eternal ocean of life and light. The joyous dancing waves of the newly created life express their holy happiness in the smiling faces of little children and their joyous play among the flower of gardens. The joyous dancing waves of the newly created life express their holy happiness in the harmonious and well-organized behavior of all innocent animals. The joyous dancing waves of the newly created life express their holy happiness in every beautiful moral behavior of all creatures. But the further the wave of the primordial ocean of sacred light travels, as a pure choice of its free will, the more it loses its intrinsic sense of happiness and life, the more the waves stay adherent and in harmony with its source of light and life, the more it retains the holy sacred secret of the holy glorious happiness in its heart. The holy sacred happiness that we can see with our own eyes and perceive with our minds in the hearts of innocent little children. End poem. And this sounds definitely like the secret to happiness. And captured here is the metaphor is the ocean of eternal light, the surface of the ocean, the waves of life. The waves of life are radiating and the waves are popping up and down, leaping with joy and happiness to give us happiness. And when we can take our happiness from something in life that exists like that, like the ocean, and we can pull from the ocean the lights and the strength of the waves, and the dancing of the waves and the ecstasy and joy that comes with it, we can take that in and build our happiness. And you know, the family did a wonderful job here of building a recipe to happiness and calling it a secret, giving it a name of a secret. And it is true. Happiness lies in secrets of places that we don't even expect to find it. And sometimes searching for it, it's right there. It's there in the ocean. It's there in the light. It's there in the waves. But we don't realize it until we take it, unravel that secret, and wrap ourselves up into it. And that's what it sounds like we're doing here over and over, is just continuing to take the source of happiness and make it ours. It's just a beautiful, well-written metaphor for, you want to be happy? Here's the secret. Really well done. And Naomi, what did you think of this one?
Yeah, you know, like you said, Diane, you know, I think wonderful that he used, you know, the ocean and the dancing of the waves as a, you know, like an extended metaphor for, you know, happiness and all that it is and all that you can see in life, you know. He goes into, you know, also the smiling faces of little children. Oh, my gracious, it's so true, you know. You know, I have five granddaughters because my children seem to only be able to make girls. But, you know, I'm not complaining. I love girls. But, you know, they're just so beautiful. And we just had a get-together in January. We're having another one this weekend, this coming weekend. Well, we'll be all getting together on Saturday. And, you know, I'm so looking forward to it, to see those smiling faces of my little granddaughters. And, you know, there's so much innocence there. And that is happiness. That is life. That is, you know, that, you know, the, like he says in the poem, innocent little children, the hearts of innocent little children. And, yeah, that is just holy, sacred happiness, like he says. And it just fills up your heart with light and all that life. And, you know, just their innocence, just their happiness, just their, you know, it's just so beautiful to see and so refreshing. And, you know, it gives you such a, you know, yeah, and like he says, joyful merriment. He uses those words in his poem. I love that. You know, the newly created waves of life to still dance in joyful merriment at the very roots of their existence. Yeah, and their new existence that gave them a sense of unique individuality and free will. Yeah, like the waves, you know, that are, you know, that come and go, and they grow, and they have like their unique individuality, you know, each wave coming in, you know, in a different size, different, you know, and they have a sort of, see, it is like a metaphor of free will when you look out at the ocean and the waves, you know, the way, the expanse of it and everything, you know. So great right done here, and I really liked it. The holy, sacred secret, and beautiful. And it's just like a dance all the way down, isn't it? Just a joyful right. Very inspiring.
It is like a dance, very much so. And then when you get to the end of it, and the line, the poem closes with the sacred happiness that we can see with our own eyes and perceive with our minds in the hearts of innocent little children. And, you know, innocent children have not really encountered enough to make them unhappy yet. Innocence is happiness, as far as I can tell. Innocence in little children laugh at the, you know, so easily, and children smile with their eyes, even when they're not even smiling. They smile because children are genuinely pretty happy. Unless, you know, something pisses them off. Yeah, they have a state of not so happy. But really, when you think of innocent little children, that's where happiness is the source of. It's in little children. And when we can pick it up with our own eyes and see that, happiness is definitely there in the lives of little children. And it is a secret because we don't know it until we pick it up. And really well done. And Sam captured this beautifully here, and a great job for the prompt. Excellent job. And what do we have next? Are you mutating, Naomi?
Oh, yes, I am. Hey, that's the first time, though. I'm getting better, ain't I?
Yeah.
Happiness. Oh, yeah. Happiness by Matt 29, our dear friend Matt. And he wrote to the quote, happiness is knowing you're a little crazy. Oh, this should be good. You want to read that one, Diane?
You betcha. Happiness is knowing you're a little crazy. Days when silliness lights the mood, where only geniality frees the mind. Seeing ladybirds with their spots briefly flying down onto leaves. When splashing in puddles is the answer, never mind getting wet or the mess. Craziness is needed to bring humor, especially with silly stories. Charlie and Lola bring such joy to all when counting becomes fun. as only one is needed, just one, not two, when Lola wants to stop or wants to shop. Having silly conversations brings a smile, leading to a chuckle and some joy, taking away the seriousness, bringing happiness once again. End poem. And the poem was, the image was the prompt, and knowing you're a little crazy. Silliness is, you know what, my daughter sometimes, she'll just look at me and she'll just go, "You're weird." And I'll go, "I know." And it's because I'm happy. I'm happy, and I get this thing, and we do. As a human being, we're happy. Nothing can take that place. Like, everything pops out of you. You want to dance. You want to sing. You want to smile. You want to... You just have a different way about you, and like splashing in puddles and getting wet, not caring. Craziness is needed to bring humor, especially with silly stories. It's true. Be happy, be fun, be silly, because, you know, you're going to wake up tomorrow and you're going to look back on that and you're going to smile, and it's going to bring you more happiness. Happiness is knowing you're a little crazy, and that is so true. It's okay to be crazy. That, if that's going to bring you happiness, be crazy. You're not going to go to jail for it. You're not going to get locked up for it. Just be crazy and be happy, and that's the message here. And I love the message and the metaphor and the moral that comes out of it. And Naomi, what did you think of this one?
Oh, yeah, I really like this one. You know, yeah, embrace your craziness. Yeah, you know when you're just sitting there and you look at somebody and then you burst out laughing, you know, and you know, for nothing, you know, just for the silliest little, you know, because you're both silly. That happens to me often, you know, when my daughters, they're my best friends, my gracious, and we're known to be a crazy bunch, you know. My two daughters and me, and my son Samuel, who's he's a little bit more serious. So when he goes, he just nods his head, you know, like, "Oh my gracious, here they go again." And you know, sometimes we go out and we're in a restaurant and something, and we're just carrying on, and he's just bowing his head, you know, he's like totally embarrassed by our behavior. And then, you know, because he's my serious kid. He's the one that never gave me any trouble. He was, you know, everybody loved him. But, you know, he's missing that silliness to him. And just too serious all the time. And, you know, so I get this, you know, having silly conversations brings a smile, leading to a chuckle and some joy, taking away the seriousness, bringing happiness once again. Yeah, I get that totally, that last stanza, you know, because, you know, I live that with my daughters. We're just crazy. And just an awesome write here by Bat, Matt, for sure. I almost said Bat. Oh my gracious, sorry, Matt. But just amazing write for sure.
Yeah, and I love that last stanza too that you just talked about. Having silly conversations brings a smile. I'm not kidding you. I love getting a rise out of people, and I'll be sitting in a room with a bunch of people, and we'll be sitting down, and it's all quiet, and all of a sudden I'll pipe up and say, "What if we were born with our noses upside down?" And people will look at me, and I'll just laugh out loud. Because it's silly. You have to be silly. And you have to, you know, when you're sitting in a room like that, why not be silly? Why not bring up something absolutely preposterous outside the scope of, you know, and laugh at it? Because that, why not? You know, we're not doing anything else. We're just sitting here. Let's have a laugh.
That's it.
But,
yeah.
Yeah, I love the theme here of be crazy. Be crazy because you will be happy. And that's so true. Happiness is being crazy. And next up, I think we have a SoundCloud, don't we?
Yeah, we have a SoundCloud by Stelina, Breath of Life.
I long for a human touch. It's been so long since I felt like a woman, so deeply desired. Now, as I grow older, and I think it's all in vain, you've come and reminded me of what I sorely missed. For the thought of your touch makes me a girl again, the feeling stirring within my heart reminds me that it's still beating. Deep within me there are emotions which have lain dormant. You have awakened them with the essence of just being you. I remained insentient for year upon year, hardly existing in an automaton world. Your presence has renewed me to flesh and bone. You are my breath of life, my dawn of each day. How can I explain this phenomenon of you? It has taken my breath away. Yet, bittersweet is this gift. You fill my life with joy, yet the pain of wanting you never abates. It claws within me until I am weary with the yearning. I cannot remember a time before you. It all seems like a nightmare from which you have roused me. I have blossomed once more in your healing light to lie one night in your embrace. Would be heaven on earth for these aching arms. Never will I hold you, kiss you, touch you. In my dreams, you are mine alone. With all my heart, I love you. With my mind, I absorb you. With my body, I would worship you. If only, I whisper through tears, you are my breath of life.
Wow, what a powerful breath of life by Stelina. And you know, as we were listening to this, I was wondering to myself, you know, like, is this a person that Stelina, the writer, is looking for? Is this a person still in that, to be that breath of life? Or is this the breath of life itself? Is this what a breath of life gives you? It gives you back your feeling like a woman, desired and you think it's all in vain. You've come and reminded me of what I solely missed. I just kept wondering. I remained insentient for year upon year, and at the end, never will I hold you, kiss you, touch you, but in my dreams, you are mine alone. So is this the phenomenon of the breath of life and how much that can give you your self, your womanhood, your desired, you give all your heart, all your love, all your mind to this breath of life. So is this the power of life that you're never going to hold or touch, but this is this a person, or is this the power of the breath, just breathing, just the breath of life alone? Because it does have a lot of power. And I don't know, that's kind of what I took away from this one. Naomi, what did you feel on this?
Well, I took it more as a, you know, because she says, I long for a human touch. It's been so long since I felt like a woman so deeply desired. So, you know, I took it as a unrequited love. Is that it? That's how you say it, unrequited?
Yeah.
I think so, eh? Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, I got a English word right in there. and you know, I took it as that, you know, or somebody that's not available, maybe, you know, somebody that she's yearning for and is out of reach or is already taken, or, you know, it can be a multitude of things, you know, when you think of it. And, you know, but her voice alone, you know, when she recites
mm-hmm.
this poem, oh my gracious, you know, you're totally enchanted by her voice and that music behind. There was music behind, eh? I was so absorbed with the right that I didn't even notice, you know, anything else around. But, you know, she just totally, feel that longing, that yearning, oh my gracious, you know, that it's almost painful. And, you know, when you get to the end there, it's, you know, wow. Yeah, but I get where you're coming from, though, Diane, you know, breath of life. And, you know, I get that, too. But, yeah, here in this case, I really think she's yearning for, you know, somebody else here in this poem. Could be mistaken, of course, but I really, that's where I get it, you know, I get it. But, you know, sometimes you meet somebody or, you know, whether it be in person or, you know, whatever, online or whatever, you talk to them and you yearn for that person, you know, and yeah, and it can become overwhelming and yeah, you know, it inhabits your thoughts and yeah, I get this, you know. It's wonderful,
yeah,
wonderful, right?
Absolutely, and I agree with you that I think, you know, it is that yearning, because yearning can be so powerful for, you know, being alone and wanting that touch and wanting that, you know, breath of life, just to have someone breathe life with you, you know, it's just, it could be just breathing life with someone, or it could be wanting that touch, wanting that, you know, that to feel like a woman again. And just a brilliant write, powerful and really well done. It still always does. I mean, she can write like that at the drop of a hat. So, but brilliantly done, really well done. And I think that's it, girl. We have it's 6:59, and thank you all for sending in your writes and the SoundClouds, and we appreciate the writes. And what an awesome day of writes. What a bunch of good writes out there today.
Absolutely. And, you know, we did a wonderful job together, didn't we, Diane?
We ended up cleaning up the board.
No, that's it. We just have one carryover from Jenny, but, you know, we'll get to it next, but, you know, we already read a write from her tonight, so that's awesome. I want to thank everybody also, you know, for that writes for our contest and supports our show every week. And, and thank you, Pam, in the background for everything you do, my gracious, you know, without you, we couldn't do it.
Yeah, and DW hanging out on the board with us today was beautiful, awesome, and just a wonderful show. Thank you again, my friend.
Yes, thank you, Diane. Good night, everybody.